This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12.
Tiffany Law is the Human Rights Advocacy and Human Rights Officer at Youth Law. Good morning, Tiffany. How are you today?
Yeah, really well, thank you. How are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. Look, we wanted to talk to you about the events at Parkville, the Youth Justice Centre, and the moving, or the potential moving, of some offenders to Barwon Prison. This has been brought about by, let's be nice and call it a disturbance, at Parkville, that has made it effectively inoperable in its current form. Some might say it hasn't been operable in that form for a while, but basically it's no longer a suitable environment or a safe environment to house youth offenders, and a number of them are being transferred to a particular section at Barwon Prison, and also, I was quite surprised to hear, Mill Park Police Station. Look, I wanted to stand off with a question, and it's not, I'll just say it. Where else can we put these youth offenders currently in light of the fact that Parkville is inoperable? So where do we actually put them?
Look, it's a really difficult question, and I appreciate that with Parkville being, parts of Parkville being uninhabitable, it's like, yeah, that is the $64 question. Where do you house these young people? You imagine, you know, there would be facilities across the state that may be more suitable than high security unit at an adult prison, but I mean, I suppose I'm not privy to what those options could have been, but I mean, I suppose we're just concerned or disappointed that there wasn't an alternate option available. But at the same time, we appreciate that was a very, you know, hard ask for government to scrabble around and find somewhere safe and secure to house these young people until repair works are done on Parkville. So it is problematic. I'm not going to balk at that.
Now, the issue that's been raised, Tiffany, is that the Youth Parole Board said no. The minister went to the governor to get the governor's permission to effectively override that. A commentator during the week said, these offenders, whilst they're youthful, their offences have been against adults, and that perhaps an adult prison is the appropriate place. I know there's no, you know, there's plenty of votes in law and order, but there's no votes in prison reform, and I think this is the problem. But the community, there's a community anger out there. Some of it well informed, some of it well intentioned. A lot of it where people don't understand the issues that the youth justice system has been starved of funds and commitment for decades. And one of the results that we have is this. So I'd like your feel from the perspective, you know, of your advocacy and human rights perspective at Youth Law as to, okay, we're in a difficult position at the moment, but for the future, how are we actually going to deal with our youth offenders? They're not going to reduce in number. I don't think anyone can say that. So from your perspective, Tiffany, where to for the future?
Look, it's something I feel like there's been a lot of thinking and work started on in that space over the last number of years. I think we just have to continue to work on what we know can work better and keep keep putting resources and focus on that. So, for example, I understand that there's been a lot of work done at Malmesbury Youth Detention, which is the alternate facility to Parkville, to develop a number of very intensive sort of therapeutic units for young people. So the idea being that, you know, obviously some of these young people that find themselves in youth detention, particularly those on sentence, have very complex issues. And obviously it's in the vested interest of all of us and the young people and in the community generally that we try and address those complex issues of those young people, because ultimately they're going to come back out into the community. So we need to ensure we're doing what we can in that space. And so those units, unfortunately, are almost ready, but when the 30 young people from the disturbances on the weekend were transferred through there, that's all been put on the back burner. So I feel like we need to do a lot more investment in that space. Are you there?
Yes, no, we're here, yep.
Sorry, great. I just can hear other things on my phone, sorry.
Tiffany, can you give us a sense of what that investment might look like, please?
Yeah, so it's basically having the appropriate sort of, professionals, experts, psychologists, health professionals coming around and working out what's really going on for these young people. What's been some of the drivers behind their offending behaviours? How do we best get at that? Rather than giving up on these young people, I suppose at Youth Law and, you know, the principles underpinning sort of child rights generally is that at that, as children and as young people, they have great potential for rehabilitation, and we need to make sure that we do whatever we can to invest in that potential.
I think we've just lost Tiffany.
We'll try and get Tiffany back on air. I think one of the challenges here, Tass, as I said, you know, and you're not unfamiliar with this issue in a general sense, there's been an underinvestment in facilities and programs over the years. Youth justice is a particularly difficult issue. When the Premier basically said, look, we're sending them here, and, you know, I don't care what people think. This is what we're doing. Or not, I don't care, you know, like, we are doing this because...
I have to confess, Macker, I do get a little bit tired of saying we just need more resources all the time.
Yeah.
I'd rather hear a conversation about what are the specific needs and how do we actually tailor that and make sure that we actually deliver the right sorts of services to those populations.
Yeah, sorry, we've got...
Sorry about that, guys.
That's all right. So we've got Tiffany back. Ian actually... And sorry, Tiffany, Ian actually wanted to ask a question or...
Yeah, thanks, Tiffany. A couple of things there. Just to pick up on Tess's point, he was looking at when I was trying to get you back on air about what specific programs. I heard an interview with Greg Barnes a couple of days ago. Greg's been on our program before and a good friend of ours. And his view was that the programs that have been successful for youth to turn around youth offenders in the U.S., is very much one-on-one counselling and direction to the to the people. Is that what you were talking about in terms of investment?
Yeah, that's right. Very much. That's right. Very much targeted to the individual young person. Very much tailored to what's going on for them. And yeah, quite often that does involve very much one-on-one work, which is intensive, which is expensive. It's resource intensive. But there's been an understanding in government that that's what's necessary. They've made a commitment to trying to roll out a much more therapeutic-based model, both in Parkville and Malmesbury. So that work's underway, and I suppose our fear with disturbances over the weekend and what's been going on the last few months is that some of that really important work's going to be unravelled, and we're going to just be reactive. And maybe government feels that they're, you know, very much pressured by the community sentiment that we've got to, you know, punish these kids, we've got to, you know, lock them up, throw away the key, whatever. But ultimately that's not going to enhance community safety. I suppose that's the key message in all this, that it's really important that we develop much more proven approaches to addressing these issues. And I suppose the other piece of work that's going on is that, you know, it's not like the Victoria Police and government aren't very intensively also trying to work on stopping this type of offending before young people, you know, find themselves caught up in the criminal justice system. Similarly, there's a real commitment to a lot of early intervention and diversion work going on in communities that a lot of these kids live in. And again, trying to find out really what's behind this, what's going on, how can we address this, how can, as a community, can we come together to work with these kids, however intensively we need to stop this offending. And I think we can't lose sight of those focuses, because if we do, things are just going to get worse.
Tiffany, a couple of things here. One is the reality of whether these young people get back into the community. Unfortunately, I've had direct experience of it, and my experience was that after a young man's spent a period of time in Parkville, it takes about a year, I reckon, to socialise back into normal society, and in that time, it is ugly. So that's probably that's the first issue. The first comment from my experience. The other thing that is I guess an issue with, should we say, the transition from when they're detained waiting trial to actually once they've been sentenced. And
yes,
and the issue with when they're detained awaiting trial is that my understanding is that most of these young offenders spend most of the time in that phase. And during that phase, they're not, they can't avail themselves of programs or the intensive interventions that maybe can start to turn these young people's lives around.
No.
Am I understanding correct?
No, it is. I suppose I'll start with the second issue you raised around young people, you know, being in Parkville on remand, unsentenced, waiting to come before the courts. And at the moment, unfortunately, that's the majority of the young people in Parkville. I think it's something like 80% of the young people in Parkville are waiting for court appearances, so they haven't yet been sentenced. And you're quite right, while they're in remand, and that can vary in time, but it can be, as you know, can easily be up to sort of 3 months or more, they can access some limited education programs, but outside of that, they can't access any of the other therapeutic or rehabilitative programs that kids in Parkville on sentence can access. So, one, there's too many kids in there on remand. It's too much of a drain, and it's on services and staff, number one. But secondly, what do these kids do? They're just there. They're exposed to, you know, other young people, they've got nothing really to do, things are festering, they're probably feeling frustrated, you know, so I suppose in some senses it's not surprising that things can sort of bubble and fester in that way. But we do need to address that issue around how do we keep kids away from youth detention or minimise the time that they need to be on remand, or if ideally keep them in the community on bail before their hearings come up, as long as it's done in a very supervised way. So we're big advocates, for example, for more bail supervision in the community that, again, allows these young people, while they're on bail, to access some support services they need. They're strictly supervised, so there's and they're assessed so that there's a minimal chance of them reoffending while on bail, but it's so preferable than them being, obviously, in detention. And the second issue you raised around that really difficult transition period for a young person back into the community. Let's face it, whether it's youth detention or adult detention, but adult detention even more so, it's a very harrowing, potentially, you know, difficult, damaging period for that young person where they've really had to readjust. And to then come back into the community is a whole another adjustment. And while there are some post-release services, they, again, are very under-resourced, and I don't know that there's the intensive support or supervision of young people when they come back into the community that's that's really needed. So we need to be looking at what we're currently doing at all these different points of the continuum. What can we be doing better, but not chucking away what is already in place. I think it's just working out what's working, what's not, and strengthening what we need to strengthen. But I'm just concerned in this climate that we're at risk of throwing out some reasonably good processes and programs that just need to be really...
Tiffany, we really appreciate your sharing your thoughts with us this morning. We've run out of time, unfortunately.
No, and I'm so sorry about the dropping out before too.
No,
sorry,
we've had technological problems all morning, actually, so yeah. You're not the only one. If I can just sort of round that off, ultimately what you're really talking about is looking at ways in which we can invest in better support, better services up front to prevent these sorts of things from occurring. I think that's a great recipe that we all need to take heed of. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.